And good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. You are listening to The Morning Show here on Wednesday, August 23rd, and we are live in the studios. And I'm Susie Prez, one of the co-hosts, and sitting across from me is my smiling co-host, Chris Bessler. Good morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's nice to be back. You were here by yourself last week. How was that?
It went really well. We had a great conversation that was with Trish Gannon, the publisher of the now no longer published River Journal, but she gave us a good rundown on the history of the River Journal. It published for 23 years, and unfortunately this month with this last issue. But it was a great talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A little bittersweet, so, but yeah. You know, having done that for 25 years, you said?
23
yeah. years. That's mm-hmm. quite an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of a statement of her intention for our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very community involved. And the River Journal has been as well. But what were you doing last week?
What was I doing? I was just not here. How's that sound?
It was kind of a staycation, right?
A staycation, yeah. Sort of. Went over to Montana, did a few things, but mm-hmm. it was really great to not, yeah, just to take a little time off. And we had a lot going on this week, actually.
We do. We have some great guests in the studio today.
Okay. Yes, from the Sandpoint Waldorf School, and it's a special time for this school. This is a public or private independent Waldorf school that's been in our community for 25 years, and celebrating its 25th year is a pretty big deal. We have Julie McCallan. She's the education administrator and a teacher at the school. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Susie.
It's nice to have you. And Michael Seifert, fourth grade teacher. It's your second time around. You've been teaching for more than 4 years. So good morning, Michael Seifert.
Good morning, Susie.
And Katie Cox. You're the board chair, and you have three children in the school. And good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Susie. Nice to be here.
All right. And we'll get to all of what the Waldorf School has to offer and a little bit of the history in just a little bit. But we have
an event they have coming up.
And an event.
In just a little over a week, yep.
Yeah. But before we do that, how about the weather from the National Weather Service? I saw something kind of interesting on the weather map. Today, we have a high of 88. And tonight, a 50% chance of precipitation showers. Everyone's really happy about that. All the way up to tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. So that's a 50% chance of showers. And then, of course, tomorrow, sunny with a high of 81. Tonight, a low of 59. And then it's just sunshine straight on through.
Yeah. You know, we've had a heck of a summer, although I've noticed this morning the smoke is it's creeping back into the area, and it's a little heavier today than it has been the last few days. Sorry to see that. Other things going on outside, of course, the big event happened a couple of days ago. It was the eclipse, and we had a lot of viewers here in Sandpoint that saw an 89%, I think, totality here.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually down south.
Tell us about that, Chris.
Yeah, we went into the zone of totality. We were in an area south of Richland, Oregon, right on the banks of the Snake River. And we had a minute and 43 seconds of darkness where we were. And Katie, you said you were in the zone of totality.
Yes, we went down just south of Stanley, Idaho, and we had about 2 minutes of totality, which was amazing to experience.
It was pretty amazing. And you know, you would think while as we were approaching it, you would think when the sun's 80% obscured that it'd be kind of, you know, you'd be able to really notice that it was darker. You did notice it was darker, but it didn't really start getting dark until it was almost totally obscured.
And then
is what we found.
And then did it become totally dark?
Like a dark twilight where we were.
Exactly. Like a twilight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, here in Sandpoint, down at City Beach, it was a party. And you can only imagine. But we were trying to figure out if we were feeling something a little bit different. It felt like you put a pair of sunglasses on. So you could still see, but it was just that glare of sun was gone.
Yeah, it was kind of like a heightened reality feeling for mm-hmm. me and for us, I'd say. We were all kind of whooping and hollering. when the eclipse came, when the totality came, because the sun was totally obscured and there was a bright ring around it, And then as it just as it came out, before sticking the glasses back on, there's like a little diamond ring thing. The other thing that was really cool was seeing the shadow come sweeping by. The shadow actually was progressing across the continent at 2,000 miles an hour. So it comes flying by, and then you're in the darkness, and then here comes the sun flying back in again.
So on the ground, you saw the shadow.
Yeah. We were up on kind of a vantage point. Katie, were you up high?
We were sitting on a knoll, but we could look at the sawtooths and see the shadows sort of come across the mountains, which was amazing.
How beautiful. Yeah.
And then it was also interesting because right before, there was a breeze blowing. And as it was chilling down, there was a breeze. And then when the eclipse happened, it just became still. And then when the sun started appearing again, the breeze happened again.
How interesting. One thing that we also noticed, I had some friends over, and once we got back home, everyone wanted to take a nap. Did anyone have that experience? I don't know what that was, but nobody takes naps, and everybody just crashed.
Really? You do wonder when you're sitting there looking through those glasses, like, are these glasses really doing the job? Am I getting, you know, ultraviolet rays or something that are going to mess my eyes up? There's an element of trust there because obviously vision is so super important for us. So I was wondering afterwards, am I seeing spots? because we've been looking at the sun so much. It was really quite an experience. Definitely worth maybe even traveling to again is what everybody in our group was saying. Hey, we got to go to the next one. The next one comes in 2024, and it kind of sweeps up from Mexico up into like the Midwest up to Canada. And so I was thinking, Mexico sounds like a pretty good place to see.
Especially, what time of year will it be?
It'd be April.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw it hits Mazatlan, is on the line of totality.
Yeah.
The line of
exactly.
totality.
Exactly. I was checking it out too. Probably everybody that went down to totality.
Or the Midwest.
The Midwest would be cool. But you know, April, you got to think about where we were at was perfectly
clouds.
Clear.
Right.
You got to think about cloud cover because right. I think that would really affect the experience.
Well, that was quite an event all around the world. So there you go.
There you go. Other things going on around town this week. We have the Trout and About Festival that is happening on August 27th. That's Sunday. That's at the Granary area, the Granary District, I guess you call it, at 503 Oak. There'll be a couple of bands there. It's kind of a kid-friendly thing. There'll be trout-related games, education, raffles, giveaways. So that'd be a fun thing for a family to do. On Thursday, this Thursday, there is a presentation by the Rock Creek Mine at Community Hall by a geophysicist who's going to be talking about the potential impacts of having a huge tailings pile upstream of our lake and the threats that pose to the water quality of the lake. A bunch of other things going on. There's two theatrical presentations, Jingle and Secret Shame, this week. Movie in the Park, which is really a cool experience. That's on Friday. That's free at Lakeview Park.
What's the movie, Chris?
The movie is Trolls. I'm not sure of it. I don't know what it is, actually. Do you know, Katie?
It's a cartoon with trolls.
With trolls. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
all
I know.
Okay. Probably really good. And it's a really cool place to watch a movie. We caught one earlier in the year. And then another thing I wanted to mention, there's Sandemonium is happening Saturday at the Forest Bird Charter School. It's a kind of a Comic Con sort of event where people doing role playing and costumes, and it's really worth checking out if you've never experienced that sort of scene before.
Right. Another thing I want to just throw out there right now, we'll get to some more community calendar events at the end of the show if we have time. And this is the morning show on 88.5 KRFY, by the way, if you just tuned in. But the Angels Over Sandpoint have an extended deadline to apply for free school supplies and backpacks. The new deadline is August 23rd. That's today. You can register by calling Community Action Partnership at 208-255-2910, and that's by 4 p.m. today.
Yes, very important program there for sure. And with that, we should mention you can always get details on all the calendar events at our website, kfy.org, or at sandpointonline.com. And we'll circle back with more community events at the end of the show if we have time. But first,
let's get to our guests. We have three Waldorf personnel here. The Sandpoint Waldorf School has been in our community intentionally for 25 years. And it's always probably a good idea to start at the beginning. How in the world did we get a private, independent Waldorf school? I'm going to emphasize that word. Here in our community, it's a small community. And how did it start and what happened? So
Who in the room knows the most about that, I wonder, Susie?
Well, I'm going to be a guest for a few minutes because I was here 25 years ago when we started the school with intention, as I said. And it was about 10 parents and two teachers that came through and said and told us parents who knew about Waldorf education but what it really meant to have a Waldorf school. It was a partnership between families and teachers. It was a clear holding of Waldorf intention and education. And we were schooled just as we intentionally started it for our children. We had young children, and we wanted something different. We weren't looking for private. We were looking for Waldorf education because we knew about it. And we spent about 6 years, about 6 months actually studying Waldorf education and kind of the foundation and some of the things that Rudolf Steiner brought about why children could be taught in a certain way to bring about something in them.
And Rudolf Steiner being the founder and the philosopher who's... educational philosophy Waldorf follows.
I remember one of the teachers, Carol Street, saying to us that how we as parents saw our children is how they would take themselves into the world. These were young children. They were 5 and 6 years old. We had 17 kindergarten, first grade combination class, and we had 14 third, fourth, and fifth grade students. And with a lot of hard work and joyful intention, again, we did start the school on September 14th, 1992, at the old ninth grade center. We were there for 1 year. We spent the whole summer basically making desks and cubbies and all the things that the children would need to be educated and held well at this new school. Well, the one thing that I wanted to bring before we get into what's going on now and the curriculum, we'll let the teachers talk about that, is the fact that while we were forming this school, we were clearly aware of the fact that everything we did would determine its longevity. And we were also aware that this wasn't just for our children, it was for the children in the future. And I think some of the decisions that we made as a community of educators and parents did hold to the fact that we are a school here, that we have a private independent Waldorf school in Sandpoint still to this day, and it's thriving, which is really heartening for anyone who was there in the beginning because we didn't know, and it was a lot of work. And children have been educated and have graduated and gone out into the world, and so we'll hear about some of the
including your own son.
Including mine and yours, Chris.
Yes, actually. My son got into the preschool when maybe the first year of the preschool was probably about 94, I'm going to guess, or 95.
I was actually one of his kindergarten teachers.
Oh, yeah.
I remember him.
And Therese Hubbell was the was the preschool teacher at that time.
We were over in the Ontario building.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we have a couple products of the Waldorf School in our own homes, don't we? Mm-hmm. Well, they're out in the world now, doing well.
30 years old, almost.
Yeah, 29, mine, 29.
Anyways, I think we can get to our guests. We have Katie Cox. She's the board chair because Waldorf education entails a lot of focus on making it happen through the administrative part. Mm-hmm. We have Julie McCallan. She's the educational coordinator. You have to have a good, solid foundation in education and the curriculum to make it continue because parents aren't going to send their kids there and pay tuition if that's not happening. And we have Michael Seifert, fourth grade teacher. And how is it in the classroom? We can get to all of that.
You know, one place I'd like to kind of start would be describe the educational philosophy that, that Waldorf follows. Maybe that would be a question for you, Julie.
Mm-hmm. I would say that the teachers strive to artistically meet the child wherever he or she is at developmentally. We see each child as a unique human being in body, soul, and spirit, and we want to cultivate that uniqueness so that they can go out into the world, find their gifts, and give them to the world. And that really requires of the teacher to really meditate on the child, to see the whole child, and to bring what that child needs in an artistic manner, in a way that really brings about a characterization of things from many different angles so that they're not just telling the child rules or this is the way it is, but this is the way you can explore the world.
Yeah, one thing that I think is unusual about Waldorf is that you try to have the kids stay with the same teachers. They progress up through the grades. And that was the case with my son. He was with Gerald Fleur and had a really great, I mean, Gerald really gets to know the teacher, really gets to know the kids, and it can really work with the kids as individuals. Michael, being a teacher, why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I was just at a gathering at a graduate from my class's house, and it's wonderful to reflect on their journey and how they see their education and what it's brought to them. There's a lot of gratefulness that now, as they've just graduated high school, that they're able to recognize the gifts they were given.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I hear people say, and I have experienced and have been involved, is art and music permeates the curriculum. But how does art and music support the academic part of that big picture called pedagogy?
It's an integral part of the education because with the starting in first grade where the children start to create their own books, they learn the letters out of finding the M in the mountain that they've drawn, and really that engages their whole being. They're emotionally involved in what they're learning. It's not just abstract. And then through music, they have to listen carefully, just as they have to observe carefully in art. And it creates all these links within the brain that help them really start to grasp what they're learning. And similarly, Susie knows about handwork. She was our handwork teacher for years. Just things like knitting help create pathways in the brain. The children don't realize that. They're having fun creating. But all of that becomes a part of what helps them to learn the sciences and the math and the history as they go forward in the grades.
Another aspect that you hear people talk about is the early childhood. How does the work in the early childhood classrooms support that academics when they move into the grades, especially in reading?
Well, our early childhood programs are all play-based. We feel like that's the work of the young child. But in that play, they are using their imagination. Their teachers lead them in all sorts of puppet shows and circle games, learning verses and rhymes and songs. And all of that is language acquisition, so that by the time they get to first grade, they're ripe to start learning their letters and learning to read. But we don't feel like before the age of 7 that they're really in the place developmentally to take on that intellectual task of reading.
So then that leads to the next question. How do they then kind of take up the academics, say, at 7, and take up reading after having had the foundation of language through stories, verse, poems in the early childhood grades?
Well, first, as I said, they discover just the joy of discovering each letter as its own artistic representation of a sound. And then they quickly go on to learning the whole patterns. They've learned verses, then they can see them written on the board. They're writing them in their books, and they're acquiring the ability to read in a fun and enlivening way.
And there's a lot of storytelling that goes on, a ton of storytelling by the the teachers, and you encourage the parents as well, I think, to read to their kids, and they're absorbing the language and learning reading skills by being read to.
Exactly, and they also each grade always performs a play each year, and that's part of that acquisition of language skills, and it's part of learning to speak in the world, and to be confident in speaking, which is just as important as being able to read and write, is being able to communicate with others.
Mm-hmm. So, how do you work with parents? This is a good question for Katie, being a parent and president of the board. How are parents drawn into the educational community at Waldorf?
That's a good question, Chris. The parents who are part of the Waldorf curriculum are really coming to seek an education that is really intentional for our children and really meets our children. And in so doing, we are active partners in the education. And I would say the lovely thing about what you talked about before with in terms of the child being with the teacher for, in some cases, all 8 years. I have a child now going into sixth grade. She's been with her teacher since first grade. The way that teacher holds my child and knows my child and knows her every year as she comes into the grade, it feels more like she's actually somewhat of a member of our extended family. And she knows her educationally and what her strengths are, what her weaknesses are, I would say just as well or even better than I do, especially in an educational realm. And so there's actually a lot of just sort of sitting back and watching the magic happen for me as a parent. I mean, I obviously support the school in a lot of different ways, but in the classroom, it's making sure our teachers get what they need, making sure they have, there's a lot of field trips, there's a lot of special work that goes on in the classroom, just making sure that our teacher feels supported so that they can really deliver this curriculum to our student, to my child. And it's just having somebody know your child that well inside and out, and having them present, being able to present that education, the Waldorf education, to them at the when they are ready, has allowed me to watch this really, and it may be cliche, but this love of learning happen in my child, just in terms of the reading, just watching her, you know, as it was given to her slowly and methodically, then having her absolutely light up, and now we'll see on Thursday. She's taken on the challenge to be like one of the top readers in the summer reading program for the library because she just like devours books. So It's great.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 88.5 the morning show on 88.5 KRFY with hosts Chris and Susie, and we're talking this morning with three folks from the Sandpoint Waldorf School. That's Katie Cox. She's the president of the board and parent. Teacher Michael Seifert. And also educational administrator Julie McCallan.
Katie, you were talking about the relationship between the parents, the teachers, and administration. How does that communication loop actually happen? I know it's very important, but how does it actually happen?
We have, in terms of the parents in the classroom, we have not only do we have quarterly meetings where we all actually come, all the families come together and meet with our teacher. She explains what we're doing in terms of the curriculum, but we also talk a lot about where the children are socially, what's working, what's not. She gives us things that we can do at home, things that we can do with the group at large in order outside of school in order to keep this group forming in a beautiful way. We also have something within the school called the Parent Circle. Every parent is a member of. We meet once a month, and that really is part of the triangle. We call it the three-legged stool of involvement, and it's the parents, it's the teachers, it's the administration, and the children actually, and that group meets monthly in order to help our school at large with. We do a lot of festivals, a lot of events. We talked last year on the show about our Christmas fair. we do a lot of events to support our teachers, and that parent circle is where the action happens.
Well, while we're on the subject, and you're the president of the board, tell us a little bit about how the school is governed.
The school is governed, really, this, and this question, Julie and Michael can talk to it as well, but the school is really governed by the faculty, and that's a different model than you would see in a typical public school, with the support of, obviously, of Julie as the educational administrator, but really it works on a consensus model, and it's faculty-led. It's amazing to watch. I, as a board member, I marveled my first years here when I would drive by the school. My mom was a teacher, and I always remember, like, buttoning up her classroom at the end of summer and putting paper down and never seeing it until September. And then I would drive by our school in the summer, and I would constantly see cars of our faculty there. And I could never understand that until I became board president and realized, like, they live and breathe this education, and they work so hard, and they're there all of the time. And it really is a testament to their love of the education. But it's faculty led, and with that comes faculty meetings every Wednesday, where they really hold the school and decide the direction of the school.
Michael, maybe you can speak to that question a bit. You're a teacher, but you have a role as well in basically running the school.
Yes, we have many committees, and based on our gifts that we have, I was on the finance committee for many years and was able to work with Susie closely in making sure the school was run, and Susie was an amazing person to basically in those early years to guide the school. And it takes individuals in their gifts, and I currently am part of what's called the Pedagogical Committee, and the Pedagogical Committee is a smaller group of faculty that take the conversations and basically oversees the decisions and helps digest them so that the process doesn't take forever, because meetings with lots of people can go on for a very long time, and we make it more efficient.
Mm-hmm. And Julie, what's your role in I guess the organizational structure of the school?
Well, I attend lots of meetings because I'm really the link between all the different parts of the school. So carrying information from one to the other, gathering that information, making sure that parents' needs are met, that the teachers' needs are met, that the board knows what's going on. That's really my role, is I'm really the support for all of the different entities in the school.
Yeah, and I would just add on that level too, then the parents, we have parents and also just outside community members who are part of the Board of Trustees, and the Board of Trustees is part of that that governing, and we handle the legal and the financial and the health of the facility. So that's what eight parents, because we have some community members that were not part of the school, that sit on the Board of Trustees. So,
should probably fill in a little bit of the blank as to how big is the school now? How many students do you have?
Well, I know we closed the year with 152 students.
Wow.
And we've gotten, which is our largest number yet. We're excited about that. We've received a lot of enrollment over the summer, so we're going to be at the highest in the grades that we've ever been. I think it's at
125.
Bravo.
And then our early childhood is a little more difficult to count, because our early childhood, we have a nursery program that is 1.5-year-olds to 3.5-year-olds, and then we have 2 mixed-age kindergartens, which means you have 3.5-year-olds through 6-year-olds all in the same room, really learning from each other. But some of them are going 2 days, some 3 days, some 5 days, so that's a harder number to count in students.
So if a parents listening right now and they're interested in learning more about getting their kid in the school, is there still an opportunity to do that?
Yes, certainly. Yeah. We're always open for enrollment and for leading tours in the school. Just call the school or visit our website, and you can certainly make contact with us and arrange a visit with the school.
I'll just throw out that number. If you're interested in more information, that's 208-265-2683. And I know that you have folks that are in the school now, and they can help you anyone that's listening that's interested, find out more and actually come and have a tour.
And there's a website, sandpointwaldorf.org. One question I'm sure that it would come up with any prospective parent is, what about cost? How do parents swing that if they don't necessarily have financial resources?
We have what we call our TAP committee, which is a tuition adjustment program, so that they will really look at what does the school need, what can the parent meet, and really have a dialogue about how to make it possible for children to come to the school. We really want to be open to as many children as we can.
Mm-hmm. I would also say that in coming from, I'm born Idahoan, but lived in the Puget Sound for a while, and then came back, but in looking at, came here specifically because there was a Waldorf school, and in looking at schools all across the nation, we do strive, and we are one of the lowest cost Waldorf schools in the United States. And because of that, we get a lot of people that move here for this school specifically.
Yeah, no question. There are people that are looking for communities have Waldorf schools to decide where they're going to raise their family. And I'm sure Sandpoint has benefited from that infusion of people that are looking for that environment for their kids.
And I would say, too, that we benefit because Sandpoint is our location, and Sandpoint's a beautiful place to be. So people are looking for a Waldorf school, and then they find out that they have this beautiful, small community in the mountains with a lake, and they go, wow, let's
kind
go
of an
there.
Easy sell. Yeah.
And we attract teachers as well for that very reason. That's why I came to Sandpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And just so you know, that when we started this school in 1992, we thought about the fact that someday people would move to Sandpoint for the Waldorf school. And here you are. It's happening.
I would also add to Michael's that we do get faculty that move here specifically for that. And because of that, when I looked at this last year, was looking at the experience of our Waldorf school faculty, we have a combined over 120 years of Waldorf experience in our faculty, mm-hmm. which is amazing, especially when you look at other schools out there.
I do want to also say that part of the reason that we're fortunate to have a Waldorf school in our community is those two teachers that came in 1992 and really laid it out for us parents with little kids, what it meant to have a Waldorf school. It was bigger than we thought, but we still took it on and said yes to it. We're going to take a little musical break. We're here talking with people and personnel and parents and teachers from the Sandpoint Waldorf School. We're going to come back and continue that conversation, but we're going to take a little break. We're going to hear a Beatles song, Here Comes the Sun. Stay with us, kind of in
recognition of the eclipse that we just had, that big experience we all shared.
The sun is back after its moment of being gone from with the moon shadow. This is 88.5 KRFY. It's listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. We'll be right back, but right now, it's the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun. And that was the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun.
And you're listening to 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris and Susie. We're in the studio this morning with three folks from the Sandpoint Waldorf School, Michael Seifert, a teacher, president of the board, Katie Cox, and educational administrator, Julie McCallan. And you have an event coming up. We don't want to neglect that. We're going to talk more about that. But next Thursday, August 31st, you're having a cask, keg, and art party at Ponderay Winery. It's in celebration of the 25th anniversary of Sandpoint Waldorf School. That's an achievement, your silver anniversary. And we want to talk some more about that. But first, let's talk some more about the curriculum at Sandpoint Waldorf. Can you give us some more highlights on what makes the curriculum and the style of teaching stand out?
It's a really multifaceted curriculum. We're really, as we say, educating head, heart, and hands, so that we have not only what we call the main teacher of the students, which we've already said ideally goes first through eighth grade, but we are enriched in the curriculum, and the children are really met by all the other teachers that they have as well. From first grade on, they're playing flutes, and they have a music teacher who's bringing them a variety of music. Starting in fourth grade, they learn how to play a stringed instrument, so they're on violin, viola, or cello. And in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, they're in an orchestra, so they're creating music together. We also have a movement program, both through a movement teacher, which is more equivalent to PE, and then we also have Eurythmy, which is likened to a form of dance. It's really speech and music made visible through the students' work, which really integrates with the curriculum because they don't realize what they're doing, but they're creating the sounds of the letters that they're learning. We also have woodworking. We have pottery in the upper grades. And we have two foreign languages that they're learning from first grade on, which is Japanese and Spanish. So all of that is integrated and woven into the life of the student each day.
Michael, you want to add to that?
Well, no, Julie, I was just going to make sure she mentioned that we do have two languages. We have Spanish and Japanese.
Japanese. How did you choose Japanese as a language to focus on?
We're blessed with a teacher and a parent in the school that's a native Japanese speaker and a teacher herself, so that it was just kind of, wow, we want a second language, and here's Japanese. We never would want to have two languages of the same language group, so we wouldn't offer Spanish and French. They're too alike, because part of the purpose in teaching foreign language is really to open the children to other cultures and other sounds of languages. So you really want a diverse language offering, which you get with Japanese and Spanish.
And the teachers themselves, the class teachers, are bringing painting and sculpture. There are many other specialties that the teachers themselves are constantly working with the children in the course of the day.
So as you say, Julie, you're teaching the whole child, head, heart, and hands, with all of the extra work, the handwork, the music, the art. But parents also want to know how rigorous is the academics, say, in science, in middle school, because they're going to transition to a public high school at this point in time. Or how rigorous is math in the middle school? And leading up to that, algebra, do they get algebra?
Absolutely. Starting in fourth grade, I'm going to be teaching zoology this year. And in fifth, we do botany. Sixth grade, we bring in physics. In seventh, we have physics and chemistry. Eighth grade, and geology as well. Eighth grade, we're doing climatology. So we are very aware of what the high school curriculum is, so that when they graduate eighth grade, we're making sure that they're prepared for having all the skills they need, including computer skills, when they go into the high school.
I would find that really they're very well prepared. I know most of my students, when they got to high school, felt like, wow, we already heard a lot of that history, and it lived in them in the biographies that I had told them. And so it was a very, they had a very personal sense of connection with history. So when they got to high school, they said, wow, we already know a lot of this, and now there's another angle on it. And really learning to learn and loving to learn, I think, is the foundation we give them, so that when they do transition, they have the flexibility of learning styles to go, oh, this is different, but I can take it up because I know how to learn.
Mm-hmm. One question I think that comes up with a lot of parents is, in such a small school environment, how do the kids, as they get a little bit older and they start to really gravitate towards peer groups, how do they relate to each other in that small school setting?
Having been in the same class, many of them, since even preschool, they are like family. We start very early in the grades and doing what we call having class meetings, where we're developing a culture of trust, respect, and being able to say the difficult things so that their communication skills are developed. When they get to high school, they have a self-confidence and ability to really meet other children that haven't, doesn't matter Waldorf, non-Waldorf, they know who they are, and they move into the world with that self-confidence. And there's been, from all the students that I've talked with, there's not any real adjustment in that way. Plus, they're interacting through the years, through sports, we're a small community in Sandpoint. We know people in the public schools. It really is a one community here.
Mm-hmm. So that transition from the Waldorf school into the public schools, which happens after eighth grade, your experience with kids making that adjustment is that they're handling it just fine?
Very, very well, both academically and socially. I've got my own two girls that I've also witnessed go through, and they're really, I've not seen with any of the students that I've had or my own children any issues that have come up in either of those areas.
Mm-hmm. One of the things with the word private, independent Waldorf school, private means kind of in, you know, separate. How does the Waldorf school integrate into our larger community?
Well, we're striving to work with community service in all of our classes as much as possible. It's different for the younger ones. It might be a very small thing, like going and singing songs at the nursing home. With the older students, there's really a cultivation of an active community service project that they take on in the upper grades each year, so that they're interfacing with the community. And in the eighth grade, they all the students have to do an eighth grade project where they really take on something they're really interested in. They go out and find a mentor and work with that mentor and really start to make connections with people outside the school. And there is usually a service component to that as well.
Well, KRFY Community Radio here at 88.5 was very fortunate to have Tom Carty be a little student intern last year, and we had a lot of fun. And he really did take it up. I saw him over as his mentor over the period of 6 to 7 months, totally kind of take it up, and I didn't have to do a whole lot. He really was responsible and so interested in what he was doing. So it was really fun to see that.
I wanted to speak to one thing that I think is part of that meeting of the other and meeting the community is that from first grade on, every morning the teacher shakes the child's hand to greet them in the morning and to say goodbye to them in the afternoon. And the child and the teacher look each other in the eye. And just that simple task of honoring the other and meeting the other for 8 years every morning is just, I think, to me, it's one of the gifts we give the child and the child gives to us of that connection with the other that really you take out into the world then.
Yeah, and it's been my experience that the Waldorf School invites the community into the school as well, not just going out to the school, but you have several community events over the course of the year that the public's invited to.
Exactly, we do. We really try to make that connection with our greater Sandpoint community because we really feel that we are a vital and integral part. We have a huge population of students that are also members of the Sandpoint community. So we do the Christmas fair. Many of our festivals are open to the public, and we make sure to let the public know through the website, through our weekly Trellis articles that anybody can become a member of. We invite them into those festivals, which are wonderful because they celebrate the seasons, which is something that I think our Sandpoint community is so good about, is just understanding the seasons and celebrating the seasons. And that's one reason why we decided to do this party on Thursday, August 31st, is because we really wanted to have a summer event where we reached out to the greater Sandpoint community and provided our gifts. And so many of our current parents, but alumni and friends of the school are so gifted in the arts. And so it was a way to allow them to have a platform to share their work and bring in that greater Sandpoint community, invite them in for a fun silent art auction.
So it's called the Cask, Keg, and Art Party.
Yes.
It implies there might be a little bit of wine, a little bit of beer.
A little bit of wine, a little bit of beer. It's at the Pondere Winery.
It's at Pondere Winery from mm-hmm. 4 to 8 p.m. That's next Thursday, August 31st. What's the art party part of this?
So the art party is that we started by contacting 25 of our closest, nearest, and dearest friends, alumni, parents who are artists, and asked them to donate pieces of work in order to put them on a silent auction bid. So currently we're probably going to have close to 20 pieces of art by local and regional artists at the event that you can come in and just participate. Anybody can come. It's so fun. Put some art on your wall. There's some amazing pieces by well-known local artists. We have one of our former alumni actually was in Michael's class, Orion Getzinger, and his dad, Peter, are working on a joint piece too that I'm really excited about to have at the party as well. So there will be all of this art, and so it's just a silent auction. And by 8 o'clock, you'll know if you have a piece of fabulous local art.
So the whole community is invited to come participate and, as you said, have the opportunity and chance to get an original piece of local art. And we are fortunate here in this area to have some great artists.
Exactly.
So it should be really spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've talked a lot about the curriculum. Did you have something, Chris?
No, go ahead.
And it's based not loosely, but, you know, there's this deeper foundation that supports this understanding of the developing human being, child. What can they receive in the educational realm that will support them moving out as an adult into the world and being a responsible social being, we'll say. And that's anthroposophy, and that was brought to the world by Rudolf Steiner. Who is Rudolf Steiner, and how does that play into supporting this Waldorf curriculum?
Well, Rudolf Steiner's work really encompasses many arenas. It encompasses anthroposophical medicine, biodynamic agriculture, architecture. But really, in our realm, we work with it in education, and it's really the vision of a child has developmental needs at specific times, and the education really strives to meet those needs. We don't teach anthroposophy in the school. It's really something the board, if they wish, and the faculty take up as their own study just to inform themselves of what it is. And anthroposophy really means the wisdom of the human being. What is it to be a human being? So really, it's just becoming conscious of who we are as human beings on this planet and in our evolving states as we move through various lives on this planet.
Mm-hmm. In addition, we are independent Waldorf schools, but for 100 years, we have the classroom really as a laboratory, and thousands of teachers in currently hundreds of Waldorf schools across the world continue to really study the curriculum and work together to bring the best that, you know, as a synthesis of our own experience. So it isn't just one independent school creating their whole curriculum. This comes out of the inspiration and work of Rudolf Steiner, but built upon for the last 100 years by thousands, like I said, of thousands of teachers.
Well, that raises a question for me, Michael, for you. Coming here to Sandpoint, had you already taught in Waldorf School?
I had taught for 2 years before I arrived here in Marin, and had training. There's a training program that every Waldorf teacher goes through to steep them and give the foundation of the understanding of what Waldorf education is and the curriculum.
Well, thank you for that answer. And I'm just going to read a quote from Rudolf Steiner about education. Our highest endeavor must be to develop free human beings who are able of themselves to impart purpose and direction to their lives. The need for imagination, a sense of truth, and a feeling of responsibility. These three forces are the very nerve of education. And that's from Rudolf Steiner. That's the base foundation. We want to remind our listeners again about the event,
which is the Cascade and Art Party. It's a 25th anniversary celebration for the Sandpoint Waldorf School. That's next Thursday, August 31st at the Ponderay Winery. If you can't, of course, you can go there, ask a lot of questions about Waldorf education from the faculty and the parents that are there. If you can't make it to that, what are their options for visiting the school or learning more?
Certainly, you can stop by, but if you want to make sure that in the summertime someone is there, call ahead and arrange a tour. There's always somebody who would love to show you around and answer your questions. And the phone number is 208-265-2683. And you can also visit our website at sandpoint.org.
Sandpointwaldorf.org.
Yes, sandpointwaldorf.org. And I did want to say that, you know, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. The Waldorf movement as a whole in the year 2019 will be celebrating its 100th anniversary. And there's going to be a coordinated effort from the 1,000-plus Waldorf schools in the world to really celebrate with one another. One of the things they're going to be doing is actually, I've already received it in the mail, a packet of postcards to every Waldorf school in the world. And every student will write one of those postcards talking about their own school and sending it out. So we will receive postcards from around the world.
From other students in schools around the country and the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the Waldorf movement is the fastest growing independent school movement in the world. Which is just an interesting factoid right there.
Well, hearing about and seeing the results, hearing about the curriculum, seeing the results from students in the school, it's not a surprise. We want to thank Katie Cox, board chair, Michael Seifert, fourth grade teacher, that's right, you did third last year. Fourth this year, and Julie McKellen, former teacher and educational chair or administrator at this point in time. Thank you for coming in and telling us about the school and celebrating the 25th year of existence here in this small town in North Idaho. And this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. I want to tell our listeners, and then we'll have a going-out song, the other star of this of the eclipse. We're going to have a song about the moon. But I just want to remind our listeners that tomorrow on the morning show, we will have Jim Healy and Jack Peterson. Their guests will be Bill Collier. He's a local author, is talking about his book, Air America, A CIA Pilot Spills the Beans. That's at 8 on 88.5 KRFY. That's the morning show. And next week, who's our guest, Chris? Do you know?
I believe we're talking with the public school administrators. We'll have...
Sean Woodward, the board chair, and then, well, he's the administrator, and then I think Geraldine Lewis, superintendent. And Geraldine Lewis, who is the board chair this year, did she become the board chair?
I'm not sure. She's on the school board. I'm not sure if she's the chair at this point, but we'll be talking about all the stuff going on in the public schools as we get about to get into the new school year.
Yeah, it's nice. Well, a few weeks ago, we heard from the charter school, and we had those folks on. It was very interesting. Very dedicated educators all over this community. Our students and our children are very fortunate. And we have a few more minutes before I put on that song. Anything else that we want to share with our listeners?
Well, there's a ton of other things going on around town, because there always is more to going on around here than you can do. Should mention again that the Trout and About Festival is a family music and activity event at the Granary. That's on Sunday. There's a really going to be great presentation at the Panada on Saturday about Alaska's Mount Huntington with Jess Ross Kelly. He's a climber, and he recently did a climb up Mount Huntington. I'm sure that's going to be accompanied with photos, so that'll be a pretty interesting show for anybody that's interested in the outdoors. Laughing Dog is having an anniversary party with special beer and live music on Saturday. And then there's the second annual motorcycle and poker run called Bikes, Blues, and Brews. That's also on Saturday. And there's more happening around town. If you want to check that out, hit our website, carefy.org, and click on community calendars, or go to sandpointonline.com.
Well, you know, Chris, it takes a community of listeners to keep Panhandle Community Radio at 88.5 viable and on the air. So if you're listening and you want to become a member or you want to renew your membership, you can do that a whole bunch of different ways. You can go to our website at krfy.org and use the donate button. Or you can stop by the station, say hi, and make a donation. We're at 323 North 1st Avenue in downtown Sandpoint. Or you can call us at 208-265-2992.
Yeah.
But it really does take...
Or you could even send it by mail.
You could send it by mail to P.O. Box 2465, okay. Sandpoint 83864. There's lots of ways, but you know it's important. So we're ready. We have time to go and hear one song by Cat Stevens called Moon Shadow.
This is in celebration again of the eclipse that happened on Monday. I wanted to mention it in regards to the eclipse that Sandpoint Online's Facebook page, there are some pictures, and people are invited to add pictures if they got cool pictures at the eclipse. So you might check that out on Facebook and see what some of the locals came up with for photos from the eclipse.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for listening to The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Bye now.